From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. The number of Americans filing first-time claims for unemployment benefits has declined unexpectedly, falling last week to the lowest level since July. Initial jobless claims fell nearly 5%. Economist Beth Ann Bovino with Standard & Poor's says the decline in claims is a good sign, but the employment market has a long way to go.
We are starting to see some signs, I guess, some good signs that the private employers are starting to hire, but they're not hiring enough. You'd normally need to see about 175,000 new hires for payrolls, and we're only seeing less than 100.
Foreclosure activity is up in most major metropolitan areas over the past 3 months. Mark Zandi is an economist with Moody's Analytics.
Seattle, Pacific Northwest in general, and Chicago are the two largest areas of the country where the downturn has been just later in developing for various reasons.
Sandy says most foreclosure activity is still concentrated in four states, California, Nevada, Arizona, and Florida. The first shipment of relief supplies has arrived in a remote area of Indonesia that was devastated by a tsunami earlier this week. At least 343 people were killed. Hundreds of others are still missing. Some airlines in Europe and the European Union are objecting to requirements that air travelers from 35 countries complete online security forms before departing for the U.S. NPR's Paul Brown reports officials in the U.S. say they adjust procedures to security needs.
The Europeans want the U.S. to review mandated online security checks. The Europeans say the checks are burdensome and unfair because the U.S. doesn't require them of itself. The British Airways chairman also says removing laptop computers from bags before screening and removing shoes at checkpoints are unnecessary. By contrast, a German Lufthansa airline official says security measures are stricter since the 9/11 attacks, but it's not for airlines to say whether they are too strict. The U.S. Transportation Security Administration.
Some new research finds that spending on TV ads in congressional races by non-party, non-candidate groups is up 75% from 2 years ago. NPR's Peter Overby says the candidates are spending more than outside money groups, but outside money is growing faster.
The Wesleyan Media Project says these freelance political groups spent $140 million on House and Senate ads through October 20th. $140 million compared to $42 million at this point in 2008. Republicans are more effective at it than Democrats, so the outside money has helped them stay close to Democratic spending in House races and outspend Democrats on the Senate side. Taken together, the outside groups, the candidates, and the party committees have aired nearly 700,000 ads this year. It appears there's been more spending in the past 2 weeks than in the first 9.5 months of the year. Peter Overby, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks are in positive territory on Wall Street. The Dow is up 31 points. This is NPR News from Washington. The head of the World Food Program says emergency food aid is needed to help undernourished people in North Korea. Dwali Saikautau reports his statement comes a day after North Korea asked South Korea for more food shipments.
Josette Sheeran, the executive director of the World Food Program, is visiting the South Korean capital and told reporters today that she's deeply concerned about the worsening food shortage in the north, especially because the agency is only 20% funded at this time. Tens of thousands of North Korean children suffer from malnutrition, says Sheeran, and because of the lack of funding, the agency has had to cut half of their dozen or so programs. For NPR News, I'm Dwahli Saikautau in Seoul.
The silver Aston Martin sports car made famous in the James Bond movies has been auctioned off in London for $4.1 million. The auctioneer trying to set the right tone before the bidding began.
The 1964 Aston Martin DB5.
The car, which was first driven by Sean Connery as Bond in Goldfinger, has an ejector seat, hidden machine guns, and an array of spy gear. The winning bid came from Harry Yagi, a collector who has a small private museum of cars in Ohio.
Oh! Congratulations! £2.6 million for the most famous car in the world.
It feels good. It's kind of like I thought about it, but I never thought it'd come true.
Yagi says he'll put the car on public display somewhere, possibly in Chicago or Moscow. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News, in Washington.
Support for NPR.